I think they like you, Steve.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
It's the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
No place to go, darling. Live from the still brand new studios from 720 WGN for show number 1221. That's 1221. Hi, I'm Steve Cochran. Look, there's Justin, Dave, Mary, Steve. Steve, are you in the newsroom? Where'd Steve go? Oh, Steve's in between shows. He's transitioning now.
Well, I'm sorry. He's taking his coffee break.
Yeah, he's out in the hallway.
Yeah.
Steve's a hologram. You got to turn him on.
Yeah, here he comes. Mary Vandeveld in the saddle as well. How are you?
I'm good. Yeah.
Pete's here. Joe's here. You always do that when you know I'm not here. You notice that? You always say, when I'm out of the camera shot, you're like, hey, Steve, you there?
I don't think that's true at all. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Mary was talking about with Nick DiGilio today how sometimes when she has a couple glasses of wine, she can't get her pants off. Thanks for bringing that up, Mary.
All right, now hold on a second, because I missed this. When she has a couple glasses of wine, she can't get her pants off?
Yeah, she can't get her pants off, and so she goes, you might as well just sleep in them.
We were talking about jeggings.
Oh, yeah.
You know, those pants are difficult to get off, Mary, you got to admit.
Oh, I agree.
They're awful.
They're difficult to get on.
Yeah, on and off. They kind of stick
to your
body.
You got any lotion on your legs? You're in real trouble.
You don't do that, ever. No.
It reminds me of the Friends episode where David Schwimmer was in leather pants and he couldn't get them
Very
off.
Very similar to that. That's our daily lives now with jeans. But Mary's suggestion, sleep in them if you can't get them off.
Yeah.
Well, we've already learned a lesson, and it's Monday at 6:12. How about that? Coming up on this show today, Dr. Kevin Most, because it's Monday. Ryan Nobles, because it's Monday. The First Lady of Illinois, Diana Rauner, will be on the show as well. And let's see. Dan Hampton. Today. And we have a very bizarre football item in the top six at six, which we'll get to in just a second. I didn't watch all of Sunday Night Football. Did the Cowboys hang on?
Cowboys hung on. They were up, I think it was 20-3. They won 20-13.
I didn't watch the game, but the Eli Manning memes online made me think he had a bad game.
Yeah,
it's time for Eli Manning to go Peyton Manning and, you know, find a sideline.
Just correct me if I'm wrong. He's looking less and less like an athlete.
Yeah.
I mean, at first in his career, you're like, he kind of doesn't look like an athlete. Now, as he's gotten older, he looks like he is in the wrong sport. He needs to be playing golf or bowling.
He does not have a football quarterback physique.
You know, the guy is he's a two-time Super Bowl MVP.
Yeah. Long time ago.
It has been a while.
I'm just saying, like, the Giants, and I'm no fan of the New York football Giants, but this offseason, they were worried about their quarterback, and they're like, he's a two-time champion. Last night, you're like, wow, that's not how you play that position.
Well, we'll worry about those Giants desperately, but we'll do that later. Let's start the top six at six right now.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks. With the top six at six. Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
Item number one, though the storm has basically ended, that water's got to go somewhere. And while the rain continues off and on in North Carolina, the death toll of Florence has climbed to 18. And catastrophic flooding continues to spread across the Carolinas, with some of the rivers that are taking on all that water that has to go somewhere not likely to crest until tomorrow or Wednesday or even Thursday. So it is still a mess in North Carolina. If you want to help and you don't know how, Red Cross. Red Cross is a great way to start.
Steve, there's some drone footage out this morning that's gone viral. One community in North Carolina, it looks like a subdivision. Mm-hmm. All of the homes have water up to their roofs. So people, if they were in there, had to get into the attic and cut through the roof on those.
Are there people still being rescued in those? In
yes,
that area?
People still being rescued. There was a report on Vix Newscast just this a couple of minutes ago. They're pulling people from helicopters from flooded buildings.
Wow.
So yeah, that's still going on this morning.
And if you have somebody you care about that's there, we're pulling for you and pulling for them. And if you'd like to connect us with any of those folks, that number is 312-981-7200. Next! Bill Daly. Now, how many Dalys are left? You got Zeppo, Harpo, Chico, Bobby, Greg, Peter, Tiger. Bill Daly is going to run for mayor. And I'm going to go way out on a limb and tell you, he's got a pretty good chance of winning.
I wonder what the political currency of that name is today.
Is that strong? It's got to be strong.
Is that the person you think that Mayor Emanuel was talking about when he said somebody that's going to win is not in the race?
I don't know. It's a good question. Yeah, I don't know.
I there's only room for, a certain number of Democratic power players, and he fits the bill. So you wonder what that means for some of the other names that have been floating.
Well, you could have the Jeb Bush argument, though,
Tony
right?
Preckwinkle is the one that does this affect.
You are running her campaign.
No, I'm not. I'm fascinated by
secret,
her.
What is she like? What is part of her platform? 16-inch softball? You are secretly running her campaign.
I wonder if what the relationship is between someone like Bill Daly and Tony Preckwinkle.
We'll find out. Bill Daly has a close relationship, as far as I know, with Eric Edelstein, who is our friend of the show.
I was explaining to someone who's only been in Chicago for 10 years or so, the claim to fame on Bill Daly was when he was his introductory press conference to be Commerce Secretary under Clinton. This would have been 1995, 1996, somewhere in there. And he fainted. Do you remember that? He fainted forward. He was the Commerce Secretary, and I think it was Bill Richardson was on the stage being introduced as the energy.
It
was hot because of the lights, and he hadn't eaten breakfast. I forgot what the decision, what the symptoms in there. Well, but the idea is that he fainted forward, and it was like, well, that's Chicago on the national stage. There we go.
Well, it's Commerce Secretary. we have a long history of people going down. Bill Daly, you could have the Jeb Bush argument with, right? Because you had two Bushes already. You had two Dalys already. So
I just wonder if the if that name has the same political currency. It'll be interesting to see.
Next, there is a drama in the Supreme Court potential for Brett Kavanaugh. The White House stands by Kavanaugh as two GOP senators have joined the Democrats in urging a delay until the accuser of Brett Kavanaugh is heard. Who's the accuser? It's a woman named Christine Blasey Ford. She says when she was in high school, Brett Kavanaugh and a friend of Brett Kavanaugh's at a drunken party pushed her into a bedroom, blocked the door. Brett Kavanaugh then is accused by her of holding her down on the bed and trying to get her clothes off. She was able to escape, but she said she was afraid for her life. This came up later in marriage counseling for her and her husband. And then on a second occasion, when she brought this up to the Washington Post tip line this spring, when Brett Kavanaugh was rumored to be one of the appointees or potentially the appointee for the Supreme Court, there was a letter involved as well. And at that time, she didn't want to come forward. She came forward at the end of last week when her credibility was being questioned. Do we know if she's telling the truth? No, we do not. We know she passed a polygraph. We also know that this will be a hot topic today and tomorrow, and it should be. The vote is scheduled for Thursday. The Republicans are desperate to get the vote in, much more desperate than they were when they held the position open for the last year of the Obama White House. So this will be worthy of discussion for today, tomorrow, and beyond, and we'll see where it goes from here. But we'll talk about that later today. Next, Time Magazine was sold over the weekend to Mark Benioff, or is it Benioff? I don't know, Mark, but I know he's really rich. He's the guy that co-founded Salesforce, the software company that teaches you how to sell. He and his wife, Lynn, are said to be worth $190 million. Or no, I'm sorry, that's what they paid for it. He's worth billions.
Yeah.
$190 million for Time Magazine. That's a good price.
I don't know what the impact of Time Magazine is anymore. I know we go gaga about who gets on the cover and things
like
that.
That's still
but I'm not sure. I mean, that thing had seen better days in terms of
it. Oh, sure, sure.
I mean, just the printed product
is
so small.
I still subscribe to three or four magazines just because I feel like they could use the help.
You're a generous.
Well, no, I do. I mean, I just think that Time Magazine has Sports Illustrated, Forbes, not Forbes. I've forgotten what I subscribe to. Inc. There's three, four, or five magazines that I'm trying to help pay for at least a couple salaries at the magazine.
Yeah, I have a couple too, and that's mainly to keep my recycling company in business.
It's not to line your puppy's cage.
No. Okay. It's just for the recycling company. Okay.
You got to get the people.
Next. Actually, people is one of them, too. Yeah. Former Illini cornerback Vontae Davis is making news this morning because apparently things are so miserable in Buffalo, he had to get out. He retired at halftime. He literally left the game and refused to come back out, said he's done. Coaches said, well, we got to go out there. Maybe we can talk about this later. And then he left the stadium. I've never seen it.
I've never heard of that happening.
He said afterwards that he has had a lot of physical challenges and health challenges, and it just hit him square in the face yesterday that he was through. Now, why he couldn't tell the coaching staff, I can't go back in, I'm not up to it, and then retire after the game, I'm not sure. But, you know, another winter's coming in Buffalo, Dave, and maybe it was just time to go.
He had a terrific career. He was a first-round pick, played for Ron Zook at Illinois, and but he said he's been through multiple surgeries, many different injuries. Reality hit him on the field yesterday during the game that he shouldn't be out there anymore. So he took himself out.
Still don't know why I couldn't wait a half an hour.
And his teammates, some of his teammates, even though he says he meant no disrespect, they did take
offense. How do you not take offense? Disrespect? How do you not take offense if you're playing in a
don't want to be with you on this team right now.
Yeah. Which you get really, if you look at Buffalo, you kind of get it.
They're a very bad team.
I'm sure
a lot of them were probably
envious.
Yeah, they're probably going, well, maybe I should leave.
Was he being booed or something?
No.
He's not even a star. I mean, he's kind of an aging corner, right?
Yeah. Decided it was over.
Wow.
Next. Eliud Kipchoge of Kenya won the Berlin Marathon and set a world record.
Wow.
His time was 2 hours, 1 minute, and 39 seconds. Someday somebody will break the two-hour mark, but I believe that is about a 420 mile, 425, somewhere in there. For 27 miles?
That is insane.
That's crazy.
There's another job Eli Manning could do. He could be a marathon runner. He's more fit for that.
The previous record was more than a minute slower than that. But that's not the big story for runners over the weekend. The big story, everybody's talking about it, is that Pete Zimmerman ran a half marathon to support his wife, who had trained for this for a while, I guess, right?
Yeah, she ran a full marathon. And so I just went with her and just decided to run 13.1.
Wait, what full marathon?
The Fox Valley Marathon.
Oh, okay. So where was the half marathon?
Same. It was the same.
Oh, so you could just quit halfway through. You could go Vontae Davis.
I was
going
to say,
halfway through, you went, I'm done. I'm out.
Was it organized or are you just jogging along?
No, it was organized. Yeah. Okay,
good. So you knew where the halfway point was?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, how'd your wife do?
She did okay. I mean, I think she did great, but she was trying to qualify for Boston.
Okay.
But it was like 100 degrees, and it was
crazy hot,
terribly humid, so she missed her mark by just a little bit. So ultimately, I think she was disappointed, but still a champion. And
she's running again in 3 weeks, though.
In my book.
In the Chicago Marathon?
Yeah.
It'll be cooler, and she'll qualify then.
Yeah. She will.
What, sub 4 hours, is that the deal for Boston?
Well, it depends on your age, and I think she's
very young.
She is. She'll be 40 next year, and the time goes down 5 minutes. So she's very excited about, like, she'll have to do less when Chicago comes along.
You know, at my age, you could drive it, and they'll take you.
You could do it like, remember that prankster in the 80s who just kind of got into the Boston Marathon like halfway, three-quarters through, and then won it. She could do that.
Oh, the woman. What was her name, Dave? The woman that... Rosie Ruiz.
Rosie Ruiz. Yeah.
Rosie Ruiz, who got in a cab, rode to a point about, what was it, a mile and a half from the end or something like that?
Something like that, yeah.
Got out of the cab and ran the rest of the way.
It's just an option for Molly. I don't want to put it out there. I know she's doing a lot of training, but that's always an option.
Give it the old Rosie Ruiz. Well, how are you? Are you sore?
I feel fine. My wife, she's a wonderful person, and she bought me a new Apple Watch. I've been talking about getting an Apple Watch for a long time.
Right.
But I just couldn't pull the trigger. I'm like, too expensive. I don't want it, but I want something to track my miles as I'm working out. So she surprised me and bought me an Apple Watch. So I was like, oh, this is great. I forgot to turn it on.
Oh, no.
Well, listen, go out and rerun it this morning. This
start
is going to stop
itchy
you
around the certain mileage. And this is worth
weird.
Nothing.
This is weird. I haven't run it at all.
Dumb watch on.
Top six is history. Back with more in a moment.
That's all today for the top six at six.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men. This is 720 WGN Chicago.
6:29 now, and thanks to everybody on the Scared Scriptless tour on Friday night. Amy Cochran and I went to see Brad Sherwood and Colin Mochrie do their Whose Line Is It Anyway thing at the beautiful MAC, the Mackintosh Arts Center at the College of DuPage. Good time. Good time. A lot of laughs. Anybody else have as much fun as I did?
Great. I took Miles to see Weezer at Riot Fest.
Not bad. I don't know if it was as fun.
I went to the Illini game with my sorority sisters.
Mm. Well, that was probably fun. Couldn't get
you were one
off.
Of 10 people that knew that the game was at Soldier Field.
What?
Yeah.
It was terribly attended.
Outside of Illini.
Oh, it was not well attended. There were probably, I'd say, 25,000-ish, I guess.
The internet was complaining that they didn't even do a good job. Like, all these alumni didn't even know they were playing.
There were billboards. Yeah, I saw billboards on the Kennedy.
I saw billboards.
Yeah. Well, a lot of the Illini, alumni, they don't have the internet.
Yeah, it's not true. Sometimes soon. I heard South Florida brought a lot of fans.
Oh my! There were tons. USF. If I hear that, I'm hearing it in my sleep. They were quite annoying, but they won in the end. It was awful.
wasn't Illinois up in that game for a while?
Yes, they were up.
They took a 19-7 lead in the fourth quarter,
and they blew it.
And I'm mad at you. I'm blaming you for Northwestern on Saturday.
Did they play?
Not for the last 18 minutes they didn't play. That was a miserable turn of events against the Akron Zips.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't blame me for this, Steve.
Well,
I probably can't. But you're the only one in the room connected to this.
And the Zips tried to give it away right there at the end. By not kicking or punting or whatever.
I had forgotten about it. You had to bring it up again.
Well, it's been bothering me. It's been troubling me.
Yeah, you're not the only
one. What was the final score?
It was like 39-34, I think. Yeah. I really have. Normally, I could tell you a score from 20 years ago. This one, I sort of deleted from my memory.
Yeah, the Zips scored like four touchdowns in the last 18 minutes.
They outscored the Cats 36-13 in the second half.
It's like Bears fans.
And three of them defensive touchdowns.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
It's like Bears fans. This is the start of the season tonight.
Yeah,
well, what happened last? Don't even remember.
Well, we got a bye week this week, and then Michigan. That'll be the start of the season.
Hey, by the way, if you can kick, the Minnesota Vikings are going to be looking for.
They're not the only ones.
The Vikings and the Browns.
Yes, the Minnesota Vikings had a rookie kicker had kind of a rough preseason. Then he made his only kick last week. He missed three field goals, including a chance to win it in regulation, and then a 32-yarder to win it at the end of overtime. 32 yards.
He had two in overtime. The first one was longer. Yeah. I made a
32-yarder in high school. That should tell you how easy it is.
You feel so bad for the kid, but that is his job.
That's what you got to do.
He's out. Just go out there and kick it through the uprights.
If he's not cut today, there's pictures of his coach in his locker somewhere that he's using.
Well, his coach ripped him afterwards. Yeah. He said that, look, you got to do your job.
You got
to
make kicks.
The Gonzalez, the kid for the Browns, I mean, he had a chance to win last week in overtime. And then he has a chance today or yesterday. The Saints had just tied it up, and he's wide right.
It's hard too because teams go in with these kickers, and you can cut them, because they had bad games. But it's not like there are all these great kickers on the waiver wire. You cut a guy, and then you're stuck with a veteran who has a problem with hooking field goals, and it's continuous all year.
Well, right now they're torn between Jan Stenerud and George Blanda.
Exactly,
those are the two.
Yeah.
So, what about Butthead? Butthead's in town.
Or the myriad kickers of the Bears last year. Whoever kicked on the Bears
would be
last
annoying.
Year.
You know what? Even now it would be annoying if Butthead kicked for the Vikings. You know, and it's been years. All right, so we'll come back and get your headlines in just a moment. We've got to talk about the Brett Kavanaugh thing as well. There's three or four obvious questions to this. But let me just ask you one. Let me just ask you this. In this Me Too era, is it just a suicide mission for the Republicans to not even investigate this going into the midterm elections?
They have to, because if it's serious.
You're bringing common sense into this.
Yeah, I don't know. I would think that you would make a big mistake if there was actual credibility to those allegations. Yeah.
Doctor. Well, we miss anyone?
Is Northwestern Medicine BP? Call Dr. Morse right now. Doc Morse.
It's Dr. Kevin Most at 646. And Dr. Most, as always, is sponsored by the fine people at Northwestern Medicine, who, of course, sponsor our newsroom now as well. The pursuit of better health care starts here. How's Patty?
She's doing okay. She's hanging in there. You know, it's, believe it or not, it's still, you know, although the coast is clear, it's still pouring up in the Raleigh area right now. Mm-hmm.
This is what's interesting when a couple lives in separate areas. She told you last week she was fine and stopped talking about it?
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be a little rainstorm. What are you worried about?
What do you know?
Yeah. Yep.
Well, Doc, yeah, give her my best.
I will. But put it in perspective, the annual rainfall up here in northern Illinois for the entire year is 36 inches. There are cities in North Carolina that got 40 inches in 2 days.
How about that? So. And as I said earlier, that water's got to go somewhere, which is why North Carolina's not out of the woods. It's going to be uglier this week, even though the weather's clear. I mean, this is where it gets weird, right? It's like New Orleans with Katrina. Bright, sunny, blue skies. Well, people are literally flooded and trapped and can't get out of their homes.
Yeah, you can't. You cannot get to Wilmington, North Carolina right now. The roads are flooded. Yep.
One of the big problems they have safety-wise, and you could reference this, I suppose, or speak to this just out of common sense, is these giant oak trees, which are part of what makes North Carolina so beautiful. The ground underneath them gets saturated and gives, and these oak trees fall. The first two that died from the storm were a mom and a little baby when the tree fell on their house. So it's awful.
Yeah, it is. It's very sad. And you know, the pines there as well have very shallow roots, and I think you're going to see more and more pictures of trees that have come down. And like you said, you know, we have rivers cresting. The Lumberton River is going to crest at 25 feet. The Cape Fear River is going to crest at 62 feet. I mean, these are numbers that are unbelievable.
Crazy. How about Pinehurst? How are the folks there doing?
Well, we lost power down there from Friday till Sunday. Trees are down. They just got out of the rain. They had a bad downpour this morning, and now they just got out of the rain, and now it's clear. But it'll be devastating down there.
Well, our thoughts go out to everybody there, but this is not the end of the health discussion when it relates to this, because there are things that you know, we don't think about until we have to. How are people getting medication?
Yeah. That's exactly right. You know, we look at this and go, wow, this is devastating. But think about the individuals that have been displaced. You know, we have people up in Pinehurst from Wilmington. So they're away from their doctor. They grabbed what they could and they ran. You know, they may be displaced for a while. How do they refill their medications? How about that patient who's receiving chemotherapy and radiation? How about that mother who is expected to deliver here in the next couple of days and is now going to have to deliver at another hospital?
Yeah, so, what do the hospitals do? Because the doctors and nurses maybe can't get to work.
Exactly. That's probably the big thing. You know, when they go back now, family, nurses and doctors are going to have to make a decision. Do I take care of my home and my family, or do I go into work? So staffing in hospitals is going to be very tight as well.
You know, as more we see these horrific images of flooding up to the roofs, and also what looks like a raging river in Wilmington and some of the suburban areas, what are some of the issues you have to deal with as well when it comes to health concerns about flood water? Just the concept of having this water that you might think looks like a river, but it's not a river.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's definitely the health risk of be careful where you're going into areas, for one thing. But now you've got this water that, believe, you know, unfortunately, has sewage in it, has a lot of bad things in it, has toxins in it. Areas down there have been exposed to chemicals in that water that shouldn't. As this water recedes, it's still warm down there. You know, it's fortunate that it's cooled off a little bit, but you're going to have problems with mold, bacteria, just a lot of the big health concerns probably start now. They were just getting over it, but now the health concerns start over the next couple of weeks.
You know, there's one river in particular that is adjacent to one of the major pig farming areas in North Carolina.
Yeah.
And there's a runoff of pig waste into this river, which goes into the public drinking supply. That's a problem.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, they used to be a big coal use state for their electricity, and they had all these ash areas that they had been trying to take care of and get rid of, but unfortunately they have flooded as well, and now you have all these carcinogens that have been placed into the water.
We're going to take a break, come back, and talk about something completely different here, and that is lung cancer and news on lung cancer. And the reason is because we want you to be fully aware of everything that changes in health. But I have one question, too, when we come back, Doc. So two studies over the weekend that says baby aspirin, not such a good idea anymore. This is what drives us crazy. This is the thing. It's been a good idea forever. How can it not be a good idea now? That's what I want to know. It's 6:51. More in a moment. Sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, the pursuit of better health care starts here. It's Dr. Kevin Most providing great medical information and the notes that go along with it, which we post every day with the podcast, or every time he's on, I should say, with the podcast. And that'll happen again in just a few minutes here. All right, Doc. First off, this baby aspirin thing. What do we know?
You know, you're right. Just when you teed that up, I was like, oh, gosh, I wonder if he's going to go there. But, yeah, it's interesting. You know, we have been promoting aspirin for years and years and years. And I think really the experts started looking at saying, wait a second, that's good up until a certain age. And then after that age, the risk, you know, really outweigh the benefits. And that's a huge study that just came out of Australia this past weekend that says that really seniors should not be taking aspirin. You have a higher risk of bleeding and a higher risk of other complications in your gastrointestinal tract than the benefit that you're going to get from preventing a stroke or heart attack. So doctors right now, you'll start to see them promoting stopping aspirin in those individuals probably over the age of 65 or 70.
Well, here, you know, in a case like mine, because I have I'm on Coumadin, warfarin,
yep,
you know, for the rest of my life.
Yep.
That's a blood thinner. And then the aspirin is, you know, for that as well. So I'm not 65. I can see it from here. I'm 57. What about somebody like me?
Yeah, well, you are a special kind of person.
Thanks.
You know, for you, we're concerned more about you making a clot than bleeding.
Yeah.
You know, this is the other side of the individual who doesn't have any clotting problems and is taking aspirin to stop platelets from aggregating and to stop platelets from making any additional blockage. So that's that case. For your case, you are going to continue to have to be on blood thinners, and the doc's going to make a decision at some point whether he stops the aspirin on you or whether he continues with the Coumadin and.
Yeah, so I should take it today because, you know, I'm not seeing my doctor today. I'm only half kidding when I say that because people hear us talk about it or study here or there. You should never stop a medicine you're on that you've been taking with regular. I'm not talking about supplements here, but I'm talking about medicines your doctor's told you to take, right, until you talk to your doctor.
Oh, absolutely. You know, we're continually learning. We're continually studying. And they start to look at, you know, when we started looking at aspirin, we said, look at this great benefit it has. And then as we started to look at it, now we're saying, wait a second, there's a tipping point here where it becomes a risk and not a benefit, and we need to identify that point. There may still be some 70-year-olds, 63-year-olds, where the cardiologist is going to say, no, you know, I know that it's still there, but you're at such a high risk for heart disease, we're going to continue this and watch for that. But for the most case, I mean, this study was stopped early because it showed such a difference of the risks versus the benefits of those over the age of 70.
Sandberg was just talking about, and I know other folks have gone through this already, too, kids going back to school, and vaping is a big topic. Do we know if vaping causes lung cancer?
You know, it's interesting you say that. Vaping theoretically won't cause lung cancer. Vaping, still, you are exposed to some carcinogens, not as many as cigarettes. But the bad thing is, and this is what came out last week, if you all saw the study, is the FDA is a little upset right now for a couple of reasons. One, for the first time in 17 years, we've seen tobacco use rising. That's a concern. Two, we've seen the number of individuals, young individuals, who are vaping now. 2 million. You know, young kids under the age of 17 are vaping on a regular basis right now, some of them into middle school. And we know that vaping is a gateway to tobacco. And fortunately or unfortunately, vaping is also used for marijuana use in young adults.
I see these Chantix commercials. Chantix commercials
Chantix,
all the time. Does it work?
It does. You know, for some people it really works well. Other people it doesn't. And that's, you know, we look at tobacco use and we're saying, okay, what can we get people to do to quit? Well, we can get medication to them. We can try Chantix. We can try nicotine gum. So we're going to try to supplement that nicotine, have it in a safer way that it's delivered to an individual. We'll tax the heck out of it. We'll see if we can't make it a financial thing. So those are all the things we're going to do to try to stop people. Some advancements have been made in medications. You've probably seen a television ads for a drug, Keytruda, mm-hmm. which, you know, increases the life of individuals with lung cancer. So we're trying to get that balance, but we're finding out that vaping, unfortunately, is drawing more people into tobacco use at this time.
Yeah, and there's also the vaping cigarettes that catch fire on airplanes and things. It's just an ancillary problem with all of it. But I think it goes back to what you said in the beginning. If the taxes don't bother you, the $300 a pack or whatever they cost now, the vaping part of this is we don't know enough to say this is okay, this is safer, but what we do know isn't good. And you should talk to your kids about it the same way you talk about cigarettes. It's a bad idea.
Yeah, and the FDA is giving them, they're putting them on a very short leash. They're saying, we're going to give you a couple months to for you to prove to us that your advertising and marketing is not directed towards children, and then also the stores that are selling now to those underage. And you might see the FDA take something very dramatic and saying, no more flavored vaping oils may be sold, period.
20% of high schoolers have tried it in the last year. How about that?
How about that?
It's a lot.
Yeah.
All right, buddy, thank you for all that. We'll post those notes.
You got it, man. We'll talk to you guys soon.
Coming up, Stories of Matter with Steve Grzanich from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio.
Happy birthday!
An animal!
Dan Hampton anchors a young Bears defense.
An animal!
It's time for Dan Hampton.
It is 7:14. We continue, and Dan Hampton will join us in a second, sponsored by ChevyDriveChicago.com. We also have the most valuable person on the planet. By the way, we want to wish Hamp a very happy Bill George today. Bill George wore what number?
61.
And today is Hamp's birthday.
Yeah.
How about that?
But he didn't wear 61.
No. He is 61. That's my tribute.
Well, I got it.
The first great Chicago Bears linebacker. You know, everybody thinks it was Butkus. Bill George led to Butkus. Butkus led to
Singletary.
There's your line. So, Dan Hampton standing by right now. Hamp, good news. I got you the same thing I got you last year for your birthday.
A bunch of Butkus.
Happy birthday, buddy.
Hey, happy birthday.
I appreciate it. You know, I'm glad you brought it up. Hell, the last time, my last birthday, the cake looked like a prairie fire, and now you want to bring it up. You want to bring it up, and here we are trying to get excited about pretty big game tonight. Yeah, hey, I got to tell you, this is shaping up to be a real doozy tonight, you know, after the collapse last week. The main thing is, hey, we win this game, we're back in it because of what happened in Lambeau yesterday. So, boy, this is really a great reprieve, a great chance of a second act to try to get back in it.
What do you know of what happened this week in practice? Do you have any sense of how Matt Nagy handled that second half collapse this week?
Well, the things that we talked about were, number one, you know, he's got to be better. You know, the play calls that led us to the point where the Packers could have the greatest comeback in the history of their franchise, 100 years. And, you know, that was instrumental. He's got to be better. Number two, the quarterback, Mitchell Trubisky, and we saw, you know, Mahomes yesterday light it up. You know, he's got to be better. He's had 7 touchdown passes in the last, 14 games as a professional quarterback. It's got to be more. It's got to be better. He's got to get to where he understands the progression and the reads, and he's able to go through those progressions and make good decisions. But the third thing is, as you said, in practice, you know, it's been hot all week. we've got to be in better condition. And it was odd. And this is something that, you know, the great Ed Obradovich and I talked about ad nauseum going into the game. Is you can't just get a bottle of get in shape and get in shape. You got to pay a price. You got to work hard, and you got to, you know, those preseason games. Yeah, they're monotonous and almost trivial, but it matters. You got to play and play yourself into shape. And after the game, Matt Nagy said, we were at a disadvantage because we didn't play much in the preseason. Hello? Who made that great decision, right?
If there was anything we could have done, I just can't think of any possible way we could have changed that. Dave.
I'm not kidding you. He said the starters didn't get many snaps in the preseason. Well, right. Okay. Yeah, and again, okay, he's a rookie, young head coach. Okay, well, I'm sure he wrote this on the calendar, memo to self. Let's play the starters a little bit so they can get in shape. Now, everybody is talking about Khalil Mack, and I told you, you know, I thought he was the best thing the Bears had done in 20 years. Maybe now it's 30 years, 40 years. But before everybody goes crazy and starts saying, oh, wow, this is like the 85 Bears, we didn't do anything in the second half. We've got to play 60 minutes. We've got to close. And by the way, I know you're such a scholar. There's only one letter difference between close and lose, and that's a C. Okay, a church has got two C's in it, don't you, Steve?
I don't.
No, they want to see you.
Ah, so.
Yeah, but we've got to be able to close, and we didn't close. The second half, Aaron Rodgers, it was almost like we were extras in a grifter show where, okay, you guys go out there and just stand around and let Aaron Rodgers look like the greatest thing that's ever hit the NFL. And we did. We've got to be able to rush the passer. We've got to be able to close. We've got to, you know, make a statement. And, you know, tonight's game against Seattle, this is not the Seattle of 3, 4, 5 years ago. They've lost a lot of good players. They've got a lot of pedestrian players, if you will. But, you know, Russell Wilson can beat you if you let him. So that's about the defense, making plays, especially in the second half.
By the way, I want to go back to Mahomes thing for a moment, because, and I know everybody progresses at a different rate, but can you look at Mahomes having spent a year with Matt Nagy in Kansas City and say, okay, well, this guy now is pretty good. Can he have that effect on Mitchell Trubisky?
Well, let's hope so. You know, and again, think about this. The Kansas City Chiefs had a pretty amazing year last year. Well, they get rid of their offensive coordinator, which became our head coach, and their quarterback, Alex Smith, and boom, pow, they look like the best thing in the NFL right now. So is it possible for Trubisky to make that quantum leap and start being able to not only, you know, there's so many things about being a good quarterback. Number one is you've got to have certain skill set. Well, he's got that. That's why, you know, Ryan Pace traded up and traded away the world to get him. But the most important thing is you've got to identify where to throw it. You can throw it fine. Well, you got to make an instantaneous decision on your progressions, on the coverage, on the routes, on the adjustments, where to throw it. Well, this Mahomes looks like he has he gets it. I'm telling you, I watched that game yesterday because, I thought Pittsburgh may be, you know, one of the best teams in the AFC. Well, Kansas City went in there and just whacked them, and it was all because of that quarterback and his play. We need that same type of progression from Trubisky, and if we get it, especially in a game like tonight, we can get a lot of confidence. And, hey, next week in Arizona, get to 2-1. We're back in it.
Yep.
But tonight, that's the most important.
Got to start tonight. More with Hamp in just a second. And I'm going to ask Hamp one of my favorite questions when we come back. What's he think of kickers?
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
I'll get Justin in here quickly. But what do you think of kickers, Hamp, after another weekend where kickers didn't get it done?
That's what you get. If you leave it up to them, that's what you get. I used to, you know, the great story of all time in Denver, you know, Butler missed three kicks in the fourth quarter, and then we go into overtime, and finally he kicks it, and Dicka runs up and says, "Man, I love you." And Butler says, "Well, what would you have done? What would you have said if I would have missed that last one in overtime?" He said, "I still love you, but you would have been gone, but I still love you." Bottom line is, they're a necessary evil, and you look and see what, you know, the Cleveland Browns, and you got to give them, you know, almost a half-hearted applause, because even though it's almost like they court drama, the Cleveland Browns are now officially a threat. And if they had a kicker, they could be, you know, they could be 1-0-1 now.
Dan, the one thing, the takeaway I would say yesterday from the tie between the Packers and the Vikings at Lambeau, just the idea that you saw another high intensity game between the NFC North rivals, who both of these teams are rumored to be Super Bowl contenders. What does that mean for the Bears, that even though they had this massive and historic collapse, that they were in the game with a team that that obviously can play with the Vikings?
Well, that's a great point. And at some point, you always say, "Well, we're in it. We can play. We can compete. We can, you know, we're viable." We really haven't been viable in a while. So it tells you, yeah, well, everybody, all the hype, the Minnesota Vikings are going to, you know, run roughshod over the division. Well, maybe not. Maybe the Packers aren't all that. All we had to do was make a couple of plays. Think about this: the 3rd-and-2 in the fourth quarter. I mean, a play here and there, and everything is completely different. We're looking at this game tonight with, you know, as a chance to go to 2-0 and in sole possession of the lead in the division. But your point is exactly right. You know, there's it's a process. When you win only four games, when you have, you know, a grifting head coach like, you know, John Fox for 3 years, where you're just, you know, you're an also-ran, it takes a little while to kind of realize, hey, we're not that bad. We can compete. Now we've got to be able to make plays and close. And you're exactly right. Yesterday with the kickers and the overtime log, you know, the tie and Lambeau, everything now is back on the table. But first things first, we got to be able to win tonight. So it's time we open a Category 5 can of whoop-ass and go out there and take care of the Seahawks tonight.
That's a happy birthday phrase. Quick last word from Dave, and then we do our predictions.
Well, just the Clay Matthews roughing the passer call in that Vikings-Packers game has left everybody in the NFL confused again, Hamp, over what's roughing the passer. Any idea?
Well, and again, see, and they told you on the front end, we're going to call it, we're going to be watching, and don't do it. And yet he did it again. Last week, remember, on fourth down, he did it to Trubisky, and we got another play. You cannot do it. You can't even put yourself in, you know, in the
you can't
same
create the doubt
code late in the game. You've got to stay off of them.
Yep.
Yeah.
Happy birthday, buddy. What's your prediction for tonight, Dave?
I'm going with a Bears victory tonight, 27-24 over the Hawks.
The Blackhawks?
No, the Seahawks.
Justin?
I will say Bears 31, Seahawks 17.
Oh, wow. Kind of a blowout. Samber?
I think it's going to be a tie, 14-14.
Oh, no,
it's
going to
be a late night.
Samberg's going to be at the game tonight. Yeah.
And she'll stay till the end of overtime.
I got Bears winning 24-23, because that's what I said last week, and it should have happened. Hamp.
I like that. 28-20, Bears win. And by the way, the last 15 years of the teams that start 0-2, less than 10% make the playoff. Yeah, tonight, it's a must-win for the young quarterback
can't
and the young coach.
Can't have it. By the way, if you go to Chuck E. Cheese today and there's a giant guy playing in the balls, just remember, it's Hamp's birthday, too.
Yes.
Yeah. So. All right, buddy. All the best. Thank you for that.
Happy
and listen
birthday
to Hamp and OB tonight, starting at what time, Dave?
That'll be starting at a special pregame edition at 6 o'clock.
You know, the most valuable person on the planet sometimes isn't around to catch their reward so we can prevent or present a trophy with him or anything. Today's Constitution Day. Constitution
Day.
Yeah. So we're going to make the most valuable person on the planet today the original signers of the Constitution.
Oh.
We'll spend most
finally
of the day.
Finally, they get their due.
We'll spend most of the day tracking down their heirs. You know, like Ben Franklin's great nephew, Ned Franklin.
Ned Franklin?
Yeah, and we're going to give them the most valuable person on the planet coveted award. But I'll just give you one little piece of trivia, which you may not know. They had to decide what to call the President of the United States. You know what one of the ideas was? And think about how complex this might have been and how many characters it would have taken on Twitter. His Highness of the President of the United States of America and Protector of Their Liberties. I think POTUS is easier to abbreviate. That's all I'm saying. So, congratulations to all the original signers of the Constitution. You, on Constitution Day, are the most valuable people on the planet.
Like a George Clymer.
Is that
from
one of
Pennsylvania?
Them?
He's one of the guys. There's a lot of them.
There's
here.
A climber.
A Nicholas Gilman from New Hampshire. He never gets his credit. Never gets his due.
He does too many movies. Nicholas Gilman.
A Nathaniel Gorham from
Nathaniel
Massachusetts.
Or Nathaniel.
I like Nathaniel. It was different pronunciation back in the 18th century.
Headlines coming up 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
So here's the background on Brett Kavanaugh. Supposedly there was going to be a vote this Thursday on his confirmation. It didn't look like this would be a slam dunk. There was still a question about two Republican senators and which way they would vote with the Roe v. Wade question hanging in the balance. But all this has been thrown up in the air now because a few months ago, a woman called the tip line at the Washington Post to say, look, I don't know if Brett Kavanaugh is ever going to be put up for the Supreme Court, but here's what you need to know. When I was in high school and he was in high school, there was a drunken party and he and another friend of his pushed me into a room. He held me down on a bed, tried to take my clothes off, and I was able to escape. But he tried to hurt me and he sexually assaulted me and I was afraid for my life. She kept her name out of it until this past weekend and late last week when this turned into a political football, as you would guess. And her credibility was being questioned heavily before even coming forward. We know that she told the story on at least two occasions, one of those being couples counseling. She also took a lie detector test, which she apparently passed. So here are the questions. Should something you did in high school that was really, really, really stupid and really, really inappropriate, should that potentially ruin your career or your career path? The second question that is absolutely related to that is there more? Is this going to open the door to other women who have said, listen, I dated Brett Kavanaugh and he was pushy and chubby and abusive? We haven't seen any of that yet. Or does this open the door for somebody to come forward and go, look, this lady's got a screw loose and this is something she threw out. The only thing we have so far related to that are people who also knew Kavanaugh at that age who said he was nothing but a gentleman. That's not enough in the case of a lifetime appointment to the Supreme Court. My question is twofold. One, why the hurry? Mitch McConnell was more than ready to hold the Supreme Court vacancy open for 8 months until the election and said if a Democrat gets elected, we're going to hold it open for four more years. You don't have to have a vote this Thursday, and you don't have to have a justice in place on the first Monday in October. The other thing that's important here is Brett Kavanaugh is the father of two daughters. Dave, I have a daughter. You have a daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just about daughters. Daughters and sons. If you're accused of this and you're innocent, you don't want this to be a Clarence Thomas hanging over your head for your entire career thing. Don't you want to prove it? Don't you want to prove it to the best of your ability?
Well, you mentioned
nothing. You had no part of this whatsoever. So is Brett Kavanaugh going to step up this week and say, yeah, I don't want to vote on Thursday?
You just mentioned three scenarios of probably 10, 15 questions that are out there. And I just think that there should be a stop on the vote and an investigation. This morning, the breaking news that the attorney for this woman came out and said she would testify publicly at Congress. Right. The question would be whether or not you would have the Brett Kavanaugh on actually in front of Congress under oath answering questions about this. So there are unanswered questions, and I think that means we should just get to the bottom of it. So before we move forward and play politics, stop for a second, figure it out, and then see where we go.
The great problem that the Republican Party has this week is there's a lot of video available, most recently, about how they all jumped on the senator from Minnesota's back when he was rightfully accused of being a jerk.
Al Franken.
Yeah, Al Franken.
And that was sexual harassment, not sexual assault either.
Yeah, and if you're scoring, you could say that was less. But having said that, you can't have it both ways. And now politics wants is both ways. You can argue all day that the Democrats held this. They were looking to play this. They could have done it before. They're doing it now. at the bare minimum, Brett Kavanaugh has to prove to the best of his ability. And again, people are going to go, well, it's not a, he doesn't have to prove he's guilty. She has to prove he's guilty. No, this is not a court of law. This is a court of life. And Brett Kavanaugh, to get this appointment, should say, I don't want to vote on Thursday. I want an opportunity for both of us to be heard so I can prove I'm innocent.
It's really more of a case about judgment, and we're talking about someone who we want to put on the Supreme
Court. Well, it's honesty, too.
Right.
You know, there's a question about honesty with Kavanaugh during the testimony, a question about honesty with Senator Durbin in the past. Look, I'm not going to tell you that the Supreme Court judges don't lie. They are all human beings. They've lied in their life, every one of them.
And the honesty part of this is important because he's denied this has happened. None of this has happened.
Yeah.
None of this at all. So even if there was something there, I mean, that would be a sort of not being honest. I mean, even if there was a little something there.
Said it never happened.
Never happened.
So it wasn't a misunderstanding. It wasn't a stupid thing I did in high school that I regret, and I'll regret for the rest of my life. It was none of that.
Here's
it
the question.
Never
here's,
happened.
Here's the question, then. If it comes out and her public, and she goes in front of Congress and she tells her story and Congress believes it, just right there, the idea that that this nominee has said it never happened, and we're in a question of he said, she said, but also a question of whether or not there's honesty, Do you say he's not fit for the Supreme Court?
Well, there have been questions already about his honesty and testimony about other matters before Congress, about things that happened in the Bush White House while he was a White House secretary. There were some questions that the Democrats say that
right.
he lied about already.
Dick Durbin was on the show talking about that exact yeah. issue. But the question is, in this case, if her testimony is found credible and he in the past has said he doesn't, you know, that this never happened, is that enough to disqualify this candidate for the Supreme Court?
And the Clarence Thomas question, which continues to come up, sorry, it's a different world. It's a different world than it was 26 or 27 years ago when all that happened. And there's certainly evidence to say that Clarence Thomas was lying.
Sexual harassment, by the way, with Clarence Thomas.
There right, but there's
no allegation of sexual assault.
Here's the more interesting twist on all of this, because we've got to break and get Diana Ron around here in just a second. What is this going to do to the vote? If the Republicans jam this vote through on Thursday, they are essentially saying, yeah, no, we don't need to listen to a woman who said this happened. We don't need to listen to her. What does that do? Does that fire up people, women, men, to come out and vote and say, listen, this party has so lost its mind, they don't even want to consider the fact that this woman could have been assaulted? Because that age doesn't matter in that regard. A lot of careers have already been ended during the Me Too movement. I'm not so concerned about Brett Kavanaugh's career. I'm concerned about the Supreme Court seat. I want to make sure he is fit for it. And she deserves to be heard. And if she is making all this up, she deserves to be outed for doing it.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
It is 7:53. A couple of texters are upset with me because, once again, the internet does this. I hear what I want to hear to anger me, and then I jump to my phone. I am not defending Brett Kavanaugh in the least, and I think this nomination process should absolutely be stopped. And as I just said, both sides in this case should be heard, and it's up to Brett Kavanaugh to prove he is not that sort of guy. Whether you're 17 or 77, it's not acceptable. Texter puts it well this way. 630, this type of behavior isn't, quote, something stupid I did in high school. It's much more serious. Goes to a deviant character flaw. Drinking at a party, throwing toilet paper on a friend's trees, that's stupid behavior in high school. This isn't in that category, and I agree 1,000%. Yeah. All right, 754, who's going to be the next governor of the state of Illinois? You may have seen commercials all over the place where the First Lady of Illinois, Diana Rauner, is now a prominent figure in discussing all of this. And it's been a long time since you've been on the show, but during that first gubernatorial race, you paid several visits to us, and it's nice to have you back.
Good morning. Happy to be there.
All right. So last week, the governor made a speech saying, listen, I've learned a lot in the first 4 years. What is this change about? And for voters who are skeptical, why do they believe him?
Well, you know, I think actually it's the first time he's talked about what I think he's been doing for a long time, which is recognizing that being a disruptive thinker and trying to make a lot of change is necessary, but rubs a lot of people the wrong way. And truthfully, I have to say, you know, the biggest challenge is no one expects somebody who thinks as much out of the box and has the kind of energy and focus that Bruce brought to this work. And I think I think he underestimated how much he would frighten people and send them maybe running to the hills. So he's learned a lot. He's learned to moderate and slow himself down. He still wants all the same things, but I think he recognizes he just has to take it a little slower, and that's a good thing.
Well, everything we learned in Schoolhouse Rock is true. The House and the Senate have to go along with anything the governor proposes or anything they propose. There's got to be a unanimous sense of the direction of the state. So, in other words, Mike Madigan needs to be heard from this as well. Does this change, in your opinion? You know, you're not Kreskin here, but does this change the relationship between the governor and Mike Madigan?
Well, you know, I think what's important is for people to recognize how important leadership is. And for a long time, we haven't really had somebody in the governor's office who's had that kind of leadership, who's had a vision for how the people, how our state should be run. And Bruce really comes in with that vision, and he continues to have a really strong vision of the future that he wants for our state. And it's the right vision. So I'm sure that he'll continue to do the kind of constructive work that he's tried to do, and he's been successful in education funding reform and criminal justice reform. There have been a lot of both legislative and, even more importantly, operational successes that they'll build on. And I actually think that in his second term, he and the legislature will come to a lot more productive work.
For Ms. Rauner, so for all the listeners who have voted for the governor the first time around
most
and are considering what's next, the question is what do you believe that the governor has done to deserve a second term?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, just what I was talking about, leadership, you know, it's astonishing to me what a difference it makes when the person in charge is really trying to make change. And what I think we can see across the government and across the services that the people of the state expect from government is just better service, faster, greater, more jobs, more energy and activity to try to lower recidivism, lower the prison population, improve school funding, improve the services for Medicaid. You know, the governor came in with a big vision for transforming government, bringing in the first, bringing technology to government. We were, I think, about 40 years behind. And even things that, you know, the people don't see that often and are just starting to come underway, like things like the Discovery Partners Institute, bringing the University of Illinois' computer science and engineering program to expanding it to Chicago in partnership with our other great universities to create the Silicon Valley of the Midwest. A lot of things, you know, start to develop and people don't, they're just coming to the surface now. And those things, that momentum, I think will be even more apparent in the second term.
Diana, we just had the mayor in a few weeks ago who told us that one of the big reasons why he's not running for a third term is because of he and his wife are ready for a next chapter in their lives. Were you all gung-ho about a second term? Any questions for you? Or
absolutely. You know, we've been lucky. This is a chapter in our lives. We've been fortunate to Bruce has had a long, obviously successful career in business, and we have raised six kids. We're at a point in our lives where this is exactly what we want to be doing, and we have both, I think, the energy and the orientation to keep going.
With respect to that question and the privacy of your own family, the discussion that goes on in your house couldn't have been just a slam dunk, or was it?
Absolutely, it was a slam dunk. I think there was no question in our minds that we wanted to finish what we started. Bruce came into this with a vision for the future, a vision for what our state could be, and the last thing we would want to do is stop midway. Again, the beginning part of change is always the hardest part. It's the most disruptive. I think what we'll see now is that change and the future that we all deserve is closer than I think people think.
Well, let's go on this. The commercials that are running from J.B. Pritzker are very definitive about the failure of Bruce Rauner and the folks that support Mr. Pritzker. There's been the same coming from folks that support the governor as well. Does that continue?
Well, I think the most important thing for people to do is actually look at the facts and the issues before them and really ask themselves what kind of future they want. I think what Bruce has proposed, while it is pretty clear, is that the way to improve our state is not by raising taxes, but rather by trying to grow our economy and continue to make our economy competitive with other states around us. That point of view, I think people should just really look hard at what the two candidates are proposing and figure out which one they think is a better future.
And the accomplishment you're most proud of in the first 4 years?
I would say the accomplishment I'm most proud of him for is the education funding work. As you know, Bruce and I are big champions of education. It's really what I've devoted my life to. Bruce has raised public education funding by $1.4 billion in his first term and raised early childhood education funding to its highest level ever, on top of creating a bipartisan commission to reform the school funding bill to create more school choice. And really, the work that he's done in education, both in the legislature, but also inside the government, has, I think, been his biggest accomplishment, and it's certainly the thing that matters the most to me.
If you want to support Governor Rauner or want to know more, go to the Governor Rauner campaign website. Just Google something similar to that. It'll come up. It's different from the actual Office of the Governor website, but it's easy to find. And you're welcome back here anytime. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
There you go. That's Diana Rauner, who, again, in the waning days of the first campaign, was a guest on the show multiple times. Yeah. Now, J.B. Pritzker, the only reason J.B. Pritzker's ever been on the show is because he had an interview or two with you.
And, yeah, I've interviewed him before.
And we've reached out.
We'll try to get him on this week.
Well, we reached out again, and Rauner has, whether you like Rauner or not, he has been a regular on this show as far as access goes.
It'll
be interesting.
If J.B.
Pritzker becomes governor, he needs to do that as well.
Are these guys going to debate?
Hold on. Let me finish the point. He needs to be on the show and be in the paper and be on TV and provide the public access to his views going forward, not just as governor, but as candidate. Now you were saying.
No, I was just saying I'm looking forward to debates. These two candidates.
What's
the happening? I feel like we're already into September. I guess October would be the month for it. Because I've heard this over and over about the accomplishments of the Rauner administration, including education reform. But I'm just, as a news person, I mean, it was vetoed. it was an override for that. There was a lot that went into that reform. And it's just interesting that the disruptor part that the governor has talked about, this he is looking to do a 180 about, you know, he's learned a lot from government, which is great. That's part of it, this idea that on the surface, and maybe there was a lot of political games behind, I'm not naive to think that there were political games being played by Democrats. It didn't seem that he was looking to push education reform forward. If anything, he wanted it.
Well, I think you're talking about a specific incident. I'm not defending the position.
It's the same with criminal justice reform. It's the same with a lot of that stuff, because those were such contentious issues at the time. It'll be interesting. That's why I want to hear a debate about the two candidates and really get into what the accomplishments were for the Rauner administration in the first 4 years.
Yeah, my understanding is Pritzker has been asked to debate, and I don't know what his answer
really
is. Yeah. So we'll look into it. Coming up, Stories of Matter with Steve Gazanich from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than one night show. Yeah,
Dean Richards joins us here for more on entertainment, where we give you more Ron
entertainment.
Entertainment. How are you?
Delightful.
Okay.
So many people saying hello to Steve. Tell Steve I said hello at the Paramount Theater in Aurora last night.
What was the Paramount Theater's event?
I was there for seeing Legally Blonde, the musical, which I enjoyed very much.
At one point, Dean was a blonde.
Actually, at one time I was.
Yeah.
Dean, was the Bend and Bend and Snap featured?
The Bend and Snap is quite the dance production.
Oh, I can't wait to see it.
It's delight. It's fun. It's refreshing. It's well performed. If you remember the original movie, which I can't believe is 2001. I can't believe
it. Is that right?
Long ago. And I guess I forgot that there were three Legally Blonde movies.
I did too.
Yeah. And that spawned the musical that was on Broadway.
It's a lot like Godfather, though. A lot of people are saying Legally Blonde 2 is maybe the best.
It's the best in the franchise.
Sponsored by brand new Smile Dental Implant Center. You know, yeah. I was at College of DuPage at the Mac on Friday night with Amy Cochran. We were watching Brad Sherwood and Colin Mochrie. They're very funny.
Very funny guys.
So that was a good show. Sold out. A lot of people are out doing stuff this weekend. A lot of people outside doing stuff.
They're trying to do stuff before the snow comes.
Yep, and you can't do as much stuff. That's what the thing. Riot Fest was this weekend.
Oh, did you go to Riot Fest?
No, Justin did. Justin was out there.
Did you see Mom Jeans? There's a band called Mom Jeans.
That's a great name. That's a really good name.
Mom Jeans are back, you know.
How do you know? You can't even get your pants off. Oh. Reference to earlier in the show.
What?
Stop.
Excuse me?
Only when she drinks wine, Dean.
That was jeggings, you know? Mom Jeans are fine.
Mary said, told Nick this morning that when she's liquored up, she can't get her pants off.
I wasn't specifying myself.
Oh, you're talking about other people?
Jeggings in general.
Mm. Oh.
I know. I'm the same way, Dean. I'm as shocked as you are that this kind of thing's going on in the middle of the night.
I don't want to hear the words, I can't get my pants off from Mary in any way possible.
Yeah, it's just wrong.
Oh, man.
Just wrong. We respect her too much.
Protective older brother. I don't want to hear that.
Yeah, we don't want to know that.
You don't think I wear pants?
I don't think you ever take them off.
The whole thing is getting weird.
Over the weekend at Riot Fest,
yes,
Jerry Lee Lewis performed.
What?
84 years old, the killer, as he was, is still called, Jerry Lee Lewis of Great Balls of Fire, one of the, you know, original.
I'm not being flip here. Can he walk?
He can walk, and he can still rock, my friend.
Wow.
He kills that piano still. And this, you know, the singing's not, you know, most of his songs is just screaming anyway. But the singing's not quite as strong, but you got to love Jerry Lee Lewis is still doing concerts. And 73-year-old Deborah Harry yesterday, Blondie.
They were the headliner, right?
Riot Fest sponsored by Depend Undergarments, apparently.
That's why my idea for a great show called Rock and Roll Nursing Home is going to take off. It's just a matter of time.
That would be a good reality show. Gary Numan did a surprise cameo with Beck on Saturday and sang his song Cars.
Here in my car.
Exactly.
I could just play that about 900 more times.
Exactly. So, fun weekend.
Justin Bieber and Haley Baldwin got married?
Apparently, that's what People Magazine is saying.
Just another wedding I wasn't invited to, huh, Sandberg?
They said that they just went to City Hall just to get the marriage license, but Bieber's mom tweeted that they did get married. And that they are going to do an official big wedding. That's probably the one you're going to get invited to.
I think so.
They didn't invite you to City Hall because it wasn't big enough.
If you're Justin Bieber, do you get a little nervous when you meet Alec Baldwin?
I would think so. He's met the father of the bride.
Mm.
I love this couple because they look similar. And they're both really pretty, and they wear similar hairstyles and things. So I'm fascinated that it's like they like themselves, and that's why what they see in each other.
They could probably wear each other's clothes.
Yeah, they are the same size.
It's like when Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie got together. They couldn't leave the house. There were too many reflective surfaces where they should stop and look at each other. Tom Arnold and Mark Burnett got in a fist fight?
Yeah. The Emmy Awards are tonight.
Yep.
And there have been pre-Emmy parties all weekend long. And apparently Tom Arnold, as the story goes, confronted Mark Burnett, who is a big-time famous TV producer. He happens to be the producer of the TV show The Apprentice. And Tom Arnold has been dogging him, saying that he is holding back tapes of Donald Trump that show racist behavior and other unflattering behavior of the president. So I guess Arnold, according to Burnett, Arnold confronted him. They got into a physical altercation. And Burnett says that Arnold was choking him around his neck.
Mm. Well, if you're going to choke him, that'd be the place
to do it. That's the place to do it. Choking someone around the arm isn't very effective.
I've known Tom for a long time. He never choked me.
Well, you're apparently not holding any tapes back that he wants to see.
Can you imagine if I was protecting Trump? That'd be news. Carrie Underwood, we wish her well. What was the story of this revelation this weekend?
Yeah, revealed over the weekend that she's had three miscarriages over the last 2 years. Two miscarriages last year, one this year. And she says that You know, she's hearing the clock ticking, and even though they have it, she and her husband have a child, they're trying to have more. And she said that, you know, she's fearful that that's not going to happen, and also very angry that.
Well, she's pregnant right now, though.
Is she?
Yeah, she's.
Well, you've gone through this, and you've been very open in talking about it. So it's got to be incredibly emotional and difficult.
It's emotional and difficult, and I think her message yesterday was that try to give people a break because you never know what you're going through. Because it's a weird thing. In my case, they were like mid to late term. Not people don't even know you're pregnant necessarily, and then you have a miscarriage. So like, you know, I didn't tell anyone about the first one, and then the second one. I didn't tell anyone, and then I'm like, then the third one, I have to unload on my parents. Hey, by the way, I've been pregnant and miscarried. Like, you're announcing that you're pregnant and then you had miscarriages. It's very difficult. Right. You know, like, if you have knee surgery, everyone knows you had knee surgery, you have a brace or whatever. Your body is weird. It's a weird...
It's got to be brutal.
There's a movement to be more sensitive and open about acknowledging that these are still babies.
There's a lot. You know,
and that it affects you more than just... you know, like a medical procedure that some of the names get.
I think, and that's, you know, Carrie Underwood's revelation about this speaks to that of, you know, trying to make it easier for other people who are going through that.
Well, I'm sorry for anybody that's dealing with it, and appreciate you talking about it openly as well, because I think it helps folks. All right, Dean, so when we come back, there's a writer for the Thomas Sulo Show who's going to quit live on the air. And he's announcing tonight. Is he? Are you doing tonight or tomorrow?
No, tomorrow night at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. I'm interviewing T. Sean Shannon, who is the former head writer for SNL, and he works for Pat Tomasulo now.
Not for long. He's quitting live on the air next.
That's coming up.
You'll be calling his name.
More on entertainment. Dean Richards is here. All right, so I'm looking at Tom Arnold's Twitter feed.
Yep.
And Tom is claiming that he was choked by Mark Burnett. Let me read this to you. Roma, that's Mark Burnett's wife.
Roma Downing.
Roma knocked Brian Fogel's phone out of his hand after Mark Burnett, well, Tom spelled it, chocked me. I think it's choked. So he's saying that he was attacked by Mark Burnett, which doesn't seem very Christian of Mark. You know, they're Christian.
They're very, right. They produced many...
So anyway, we're going to have our best people on this today, aren't we, Dean? We're going to chase this down?
I don't know.
May not get to it at all.
Coincidentally, Tom has a new show that's premiering tomorrow night. So I'm wondering, this thing's a little bit of a publicity.
Come on, you think?
I don't know.
Not as I said, I've known Tom for a long time. There were times that I considered choking him. Because he's got that kind of personality, or at least he used to.
That's odd, because his behavior is normally so sedate and level-headed.
Remember when
when he was married to Roseanne.
When we had Tom in studio the last time, Steve, were you going to want... Did you feel like choking him?
Yeah. There's always a point where you feel like choking Tom. He's a nice guy. He really is a nice guy. And he's a very talented guy. He used to take a lot of grief because, you know, he latched onto Roseanne, and therefore he was just riding along and he didn't have anything going for him. He's a good guy and he's a talented guy. You know, one of his best friends still is, Dean? Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Really?
Yeah. Hmm. They did the... What was the movie that Arnold Schwarzenegger, Tom Arnold, and... you'd say, you know, oddly enough, it was one of them shoot 'em up movies.
Last Action Hero?
That's it.
Yeah. Oh, I thought it was the grandpas on the motorcycles.
No, that's a different one.
Wild Hogs.
Did see Schwarzenegger.
That was the name of it.
Sadly, I remember.
That was the name of it.
That's so great.
I watched Predator, the original Predator, with Arnold Schwarzenegger this weekend. Show Miles and Julie, who had not seen it. She says, doesn't hold up. I was like, oh, it's so great. Remember this? Look at this technology. The aliens, he's camouflaged. So cool. Doesn't hold up.
And then did you take them to see the new Predators?
No, I think that was the idea.
That would have been mean.
Yeah, that would have been mean. I think Predator's
I'd
out.
I'd be calling
right
DCFS
now.
On
Could have been
right
charges
now.
Involved. All right,
well, this just in, Roma Downey has tweeted a picture of a bruised hand claiming... that when Tom Arnold ambushed her husband and her at a charity event, that she was injured and shows her hand with a big bruise on it.
At what point did the naked guy from the first Survivor get involved in this? Anywhere?
I want to know if Dean is going to be bouncing between the Bears and the Emmys, or just sticking with Emmys.
Actually, I'm going to be interviewing Mr. Bradley Cooper, who is in town today.
Oh, God, this is tough. I wish you'd told me, because all day long people are going to be going Bradley Cooper, and I go, no, it's Steve.
Exactly. So I'm going to be interviewing him, and then when I get home, catch up watching the Emmy Awards Just the Emmy Award, so I don't think I can do any Bears.
Well, tell B-Coop I said hi. That's what I call him. I call him B-Coop.
B-Coop.
Yeah, B-Coop.
I wonder if Gaga told him that she kissed Dean Richards' hand, and so Bradley Cooper might kiss his hand.
I'm hoping.
He may.
And I was off. It's True Lies. It was not last
episode. Oh, that's it. True Lies with Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I still like that.
That's where they became
Dean
friends.
Dean knew Wild Hogs. That's the best part.
T'Shawn Shannon, former head writer at SNL, works with Thomas Sulo, and even though he stiffed us on the interview, you're talking to him.
Well, I'm talking with him tomorrow. We'll try to get him maybe tomorrow.
I don't know if we will.
Tomorrow.
It's not his fault. It's the number the publicist gave for him is going to nowhere.
If you can prove that it's not his fault, he can come
prove
on.
Prove it's not his fault. He's probably sitting at the phone going, "What's up?"
I say quit you too.
Yeah. I know, right?
He's quitting all WGN.
So we're interviewing him tomorrow at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. It's going to be fun. It's you can tour the exhibit, and we're going to do a conversation about what it was like working at SNL.
Tickets just there?
Yeah.
Their website?
Yeah, or you go to the website.
Maybe we'll ask him what it was like to do the Is Dean Richards Billy Joel
segment. Best bit ever.
Man, that was funny.
Because he was involved in that.
I think Dean Richards is Billy Joel and Tom Skilling threatening to kill Pat Tomasulo are your top two.
You know, at the Paramount last night, you know, theater audiences are a little older, a little more, I like to think a little more mature.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're into the arts, they're going to theater. Practically everybody in the lobby is going, "Hey, Billy Joel."
Well, it's an upgrade from "Hey, moron."
Hey, Billy Joel's here.
All right, man, I'll talk to you tomorrow.
See ya.
8:34, news next, 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Look, we're only carried to two. Was it 10 hours away from kickoff? What is it, Dave? 10?
Kickoff is at 7:15.
7:15. It's 8:45. That's a 9:30. It's tonight.
It is tonight.
There are so many bars in the area that, of course, make their money tonight, the Monday Night Football game. But for my money, I would go see the guys from Deadspin at Thalia Hall.
It's crazy. They're here right now.
Who are not only doing the Deadcast podcast, which is a tremendous sports podcast, but they are going to be watching the game with fans at Thalia Hall tonight.
Let's be honest. After the podcast is over, you guys are leaving. You're not hanging around.
No, we're staying.
Nah, you're not hanging around. This is just a hook to sell tickets.
There's a nap room. I can, like, there's just a quiet place where I can just for the first time.
Is it Thalia Hall?
If you go and I ditch early and you're not allowed to come and yell at me about the Vikings kicker situation, you will get your money back.
Drew McGarry and David Roth in studio. Good to see you guys. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having us.
We're excited.
The Deadcast tonight, what time?
It is at 6:00 at Thalia Hall. The doors open then. The podcast is at 6:30, and then we're gonna do a hard out at 7:15, so the game comes on. And actually, when we first announced it, we said, "Well, we'll finish the game at 8:15, or we'll finish the podcast at 8:15, and then we'll watch the game." And then, this has gone through like layers of approval, like at the company. And then some reader was like, "You know, we're on Central Time, right, Drew?" And it's
oh yeah, you're gonna have to pull
where
that all
this,
back.
Where's the idea come thing? From? The idea of doing a live podcast and sharing with your fans a football game. I mean, because obviously you guys have done so much with your sports coverage at Deadspin, but where does this idea of getting out and doing it live before a football game come from?
You get sick of the office, right?
Yeah, I mean, more or less. Like, he's, you know, at home on his computer and his kids are yelling and I'm in a studio and it's kind of like weirdly cold. This is a lot cooler.
Yes.
You're allowed to have beer here, whereas when you do it in the office, everybody gets kind of...
Plus, right now, even if you have no audience whatsoever, there's nothing cooler than touring a podcast around the country. People who don't listen will come out. You guys are going to have probably a crowd control problem tonight.
I mean, at heart, we're people.
Yeah. Like most podcasters, mostly we just love being around other people.
Uh-huh.
But sometimes I need a rally to know that the people love me to cover up my insecurities.
Sandberg, if you weren't going to the Bears game tonight, would you come out to this?
I would. I love going. I've seen a few live podcasts. I saw Corolla, the Sklar Brothers, that Chiefs, he's one of my favorite.
You don't get enough
podcasts.
Of radio in the morning?
No. Okay. I like the more obscure things, but I, you know, because you guys don't usually do it together, do you have a weird chemistry thing hurdle that you have to get over when you're on stage doing it?
No, it's much better because I do it, I'm at the house and he's at the office and I can't see him. So what always happens is we end up talking over each other and it's, "Oh, I'm sorry, you go."
How many of these shows have you done now?
I don't know. Enough to be better at it than we are.
He was doing it before I started there and he had an entirely different, a guy that would keep steering the conversation back to the White Sox there. So just the fact that I don't do that, I think, like, the
but this is a great way to ruin your friendship.
No. It's all right.
Yeah, it's not like a national tour. Like, we're all leaving tomorrow.
We don't speak outside.
Yeah, like, if we got in a van and drove to Cincinnati, like, yes, that would be an incredible way to.
You thought about doing it in cat suits? I mean, if you're going to take it nationwide.
Well, I don't want to spoil it, but there may be surprises this evening. Yeah. For we have christened the podcast Bear Monday. So there will be a bear theme of some sort.
Could be bear heads, bear suits, bear repellent, bear urine.
I don't really know. No spoilers. No spoilers.
For you guys,
let's just say that it's bear urine.
Has become such a national brand. I mean, the style of sports and comedy and what you guys bring to it. Drew with the Why Your Team Sucks segments.
None of which you can read on air.
Yeah, but they're so great. But for you guys, I mean, talk about being a part of a new movement of sports journalism or sports commentary where you bring in more smart-ass comments to it than maybe the norm.
I just remember when Deadspin started, I was relieved because, like, they would complain about ESPN and there was no, like, real major outlet that complained about ESPN because ESPN just, like, sort of owned everything.
Well, and everybody thought that's where they were going to work, so they didn't want to have a problem with them.
And even today, you know, all of the major networks, you know, they're all in bed with the NFL, so there are limits to the coverage that they can provide. So it's really important, I think, and I don't mean this in a, you know, in a self... it's too late. I already blew smoke up my own.
Finish it.
I destroyed it.
When I changed the game the first time.
Yeah.
But finish your thought.
It's odd. When Leach founded the site that was Sports Without Access, Favor, or Discretion, we've kept the tagline, and it works. It still oddly works. It shouldn't work. We should have sold that ages ago.
Is it harder now that you've become more popular? I mean, do you find it harder to keep that tagline and keep that sort of authentic style?
No one's offering us access yet. So the answer to that part of it is yes. And then the rest of it is like, I mean, I think I started later. You know, I would read Deadspin like at like early crappy office jobs that I had. And I've been there for just going on 1 year. But having been at all the other places I'd been at SB Nation before that, I was at Vice Sports and like all great sites with great people. It was hard to know, you know, what they wanted me to do and what it was about. Whereas the idea of like starting a Deadspin, you know what a Deadspin story is and you know how it's going to be written.
Yeah, but what's interesting though is you might have to tone it down a little as far as impact and journalism and bring it back to more entertainment, right?
Yeah, to a certain extent. It's hard. I mean, because like the journalism part of it, there's only so much you can do if you don't have access to a locker room.
But you have a no cliche zone. You should see
our style guide. I mean, there's like a million different ways of writing about a football game that are strictly verboten there. Like yeah. You can't, or like took to Twitter. Not allowed to use that phrase.
If you say
like,
at the end of the day, are you fired?
We should have like a
curse
jar.
Yeah, we can't do that. We can't use the word D-bag. Like it,
yeah, it seems appropriate.
Because
yeah.
It was co-opted by D-bags, so we can't use it anymore.
By the way, that's a completely different site.
We can't do, if we're doing a listicle, like... Mm-hmm. The 20 greatest quarterbacks of all time. It can't be a nice number. It has to be like 17.
It can't be round. Dave Ennett, Chicago sports legend that you are. What do you think of this new wave of journalism?
Oh well, look, I read Deadspin all the time.
Let's be honest, you hate these guys.
No, not at all. I just don't want to see my. I don't want to see my name there. I think it's kind of like Mike Wallace in 60 Minutes.
You know,
you don't want to see him waiting outside the door, but. You guys have broken stories, and despite the lack of access, what has been your biggest accomplishment journalistically, do you think, David?
I mean, for me, again, like, since I've been there, like, I've done nothing of note. But I thought the Manti Te'o story was good as, you know, like, it gets, basically, and that was 100%, like... the virtual version of Shoe Leather. You know, they called people, they did internet records and stuff like that, but they never had, you know, an opportunity to talk to him. Sure. I tell you, because they didn't have a credential for a Notre Dame locker room.
So what about you, Drew? I mean, if you want your parents and your family to be proud of you, what story do you tell?
Oh, I'm so far gone from that.
Yeah, it's by the boards.
Yeah.
I mean, the site exists because, you know, the two most famous, the three things it's most famous for is Te'o. The other thing is Brett Favre's penis. Mm-hmm. And then the other are the Greg Hardy photos that Diana Moskovitz found.
Wouldn't you be proud?
To me, it's good to have that balance of like actual hard journalism. But then, you know, if someone performs analingus at a tailgate party, we'd still put that photo.
You know what's funny is before we started this segment, he goes, last time I was on with you, Steve, I almost cursed. I'm going to make sure I clean it up for this segment.
I didn't curse.
That was Latin.
No, all of these are medical terms.
That's an airline I'm talking about. Right. You fly to Dublin on it. Aer Lingus.
By the way, you're staying for the post-show meeting.
I know you guys, you don't have any access, but have you found yourself in situations similar to the guy from Barstool Sports who like got with the Blackhawks and went around with the Stanley Cup when we were in town? When we were winning.
That's interesting, because guys, athletes are fans. Some of them, at least. Do they want to hang with you guys?
No one wants to hang with us, man.
They don't. No. I mean, I've been credentialed for stuff like the National Spelling Bee and stuff like that. But, you know, in general, we had learned very early on that, like going to a press box is inherently worthless because everyone's writing the same thing. You can watch the game on TV.
Unless you need a ticket. Store. That's the only reason to go to the press box.
Right. That's right. So, you know, that sort of view is well covered, even now, as newspapers are struggling. There's still enough of that basic coverage. What you really need is someone to sit there and say, that game sucked.
Yeah.
In the most emphatic
especially
way
in Chicago,
possible.
Right.
Well, stand by, because we're going to break the Bears down with some game tape from last week in just a second. But before that, remind you that tonight at Thalia Hall, that's 1807 South Allport Street, Chicago, Illinois, 60608. $15.
You get a drink.
Yeah, you get a drink.
That's cheap.
Yeah.
That's a great price.
So you
buy tickets at the door.
Yeah. Well, yeah, for a limited time. And some of the obstructed view seating is better than you've heard at Thalia Hall. So
I mean, there's a concrete pillar in front of most of the seats.
But it's worth it.
For live podcasts, the obstructed view seats actually cost more.
You're there. Right? You're there for the history.
Because you just want to hear. Right?
Yeah.
You don't want to see anything.
It's so much a different live experience.
All right. More with these guys in a second. We'll see if we can crash and burn here.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show. On 720 WGN.
This is perfect that these guys are here because Super Joe's Monday Sox question is here. This is where we give away four White Sox tickets. And by the way, they're both eligible to win. So, what is your Super Joe question of the day, Super Joe?
All right, the Sox and Cubs get together again this weekend.
Yes.
The White Sox lead the all-time series 59-56. Three players have four saves each. Name one.
Three players? You're saying three?
Three.
Three players have saved at least four of those games.
I know.
All right, we got to name one of the three?
Name one of the three.
312-981-7200
is the number. Can I say my guess?
Sure.
I want to pick Freddie Garcia because I always pick Freddie Garcia.
Because you always pick Sweaty Freddie?
I do.
It is not Sweaty Freddie.
Can I guess one?
Sure.
Chapman.
Which Chapman?
Aroldis.
Graham Chapman, the guy from Monty Python?
No, Aroldis Chapman.
They probably
Aroldis
didn't even
Chapman.
Play.
I'll do Chapman one, too, if we're doing it.
Chapman has not competed in a Cubs-Sox series.
Because wasn't he a Cub, though?
Yeah, but he came in at the deadline, and they probably played those games. They usually play the Cubs-Sox in May.
Solid guess, though. Doesn't hurt your credibility at all.
This is my attempt of no baseball, and I just failed.
Save Folk. That many games?
Folk?
Yeah. I just like saying his name. I might do it again.
You never know. 312-981-7200 is the number. All right, let's blatantly plug what you're doing tonight again. The Deadspin Deadcast tonight. By the way, did the Deadspin guys know that you're out doing this, or are you just doing it on your own?
No, they know. They know.
Did they approve it?
Yeah. No, they paid.
Somebody was
our bosses are with us, and they paid for dinner last night.
This whole thing feels like something you two are just doing for the fun.
Oh, yeah, I would do. It's a total boondoggle.
Doesn't feel sanctioned at all to me.
It was sanctioned by the website, but I'm definitely enjoying the boondoggle aspect of it.
Oh, yeah, the kind of like the buccaneering spirit that our podcast was founded
on. Did you think about calling it buccaneering spirit?
We did. There's a cruise line that holds that copyright, so we couldn't do it.
David Roth and Drew McGarry in studio, they do the Deadcast podcast. They're going to be at Thalia Hall tonight doing it live and then watching the Bears game. Drew, you're not a Bears fan.
I'm not, but that's all right.
It's not. It's all right. What do you make of this team, and should we trust you since you're wearing a Minnesota Vikings hat? And David, I'm going to keep him in line.
I'm going to do my utmost. I'm a Giants fan. I have no dog in this fight. I'm just waiting to see how the draft.
Based on how they played last night, you have no dog.
I know. I don't. Well, there's like two really good players, and then they're just surrounding an old guy to keep him safe.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
It is funny. They got all these new guys on the Giants, and yet they still suck. What could be the common thread? What could be the same?
I've never seen an assisted living huddle until last night's game.
Even though I am a Vikings fan, I tend to ally myself with Bears and Lions fans in a shared mutual
hatred of the Packers.
Yes, just despise the Packers. Mm-hmm. And so I was very heartbroken when they blew that lead last week.
Yeah.
I was excited for a new era in which Aaron Rodgers is destroyed, and the Bears have some.
You mean you don't mean physically? You mean physically and emotionally?
Yeah, yeah.
You
no,
like
no.
him crushed?
No, no. I don't want him. I would not crush him. I don't want that.
Okay.
But I want. It was exciting to me to have Matt Nagy, like, you know, sort of like, oh, they're going to be Eagles Midwest, you know, and all. It sounded exciting, and then they went and Bears did.
There's definitely that period at the end of the first half where when Kizer was in and Khalil Mack was just like pushing him around, like he made him give him $50 on the field and stuff. Like, there's just like really brutal, and I was like, I mean, I don't know enough about
his
this.
Lunch money.
Yeah, but it was basically like, if this is actually the way the Bears are, like, holy crap. Like,
yeah, and Mack is so casual about it because he's always in a 2-point stance, so it's like, like, he'll just, like, grab you and just throw you aside. Like,
right.
Let me...
Bam, bam.
Let
bam,
me
bam.
What do you think as of... I mean, yes, we were talking about it earlier. The Vikings kicker, this kicker misses 3 field goals. Should he be on the sidelines? Should he be done?
He should be at the bottom of a river.
Yeah, I agree with him.
Yeah.
But are you thinking Super Bowl for the Vikings?
No, because the Vikings. No. They'll be undone by something. Some horrible Achilles heel. And the rest of the NFC is good, so...
Maybe they'll just tie each week. That way...
Well, that's what people...
I hate ties.
The Browns are on the verge of going to overtime yesterday, and if they had gone 0-2, as my friend Barry said, it would have been the greatest thing in history.
Yeah, there is that. The prop bets in the office would have been remarkable.
All right, let's see who's winning. Bob from Plainfield. What's the answer to the question, Bob from Plainfield? Why didn't Bob get on the air with me here? There you go. Bob, what's the answer?
It is Big Bad Bobby Jenks.
Ding, ding, ding.
Bobby Jenks. Oh. All right, and Super Joe, who were the other two?
That would be Carlos Marmol and Bobby Howery.
Yeah, right. Bobby Howery. Yeah.
Carlos Marmol had 4 saves.
Bobby Howery got saves. I thought he was, I guess he pitched for both teams, but I didn't think he ever got to pitch last.
You two are a huge disappointment in regards to this question, but you won't be tonight at Thalia Hall. Huh?
Well,
see what I did there?
See
what I did there?
I might say Keith Foulke's name again.
Don't you do it.
No, I won't.
Don't you do it.
Much. Sorry.
$15. I'm telling you, $15 is so, it's so reasonable of both of you to do it for that price.
We do it for the people.
Yeah, live podcast taping with Drew and Roth tonight at Thalia Hall. Go get them at the door, right? Get the tickets.
Yeah, get them at the door. Okay. You'd be a fool not to buy them.
All right, stop calling me names. And thank you guys for coming.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you guys
for having us. Appreciate it.
Coming up, Stories That Matter. Steve Grzanich in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom next on WGN Radio.
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
This is the Steve Cochran Show
on 720 WGN.
9:15. Couple of creepy things. Sorry, couple of creepy things we got to talk about.
Creepy.
One is Sunya Previn. Anyone? Anyone? Sunya Previn.
She's the Woody Allen girl, right?
That's right.
Mrs. Woody Allen.
The daughter and then the wife?
Mia Farrow and Andre Previn's adopted daughter, in a lengthy New York Magazine profile, is speaking out for the first time. She's 48 years old now, and she is talking about the dysfunction. She's talking about, really, I mean, the hottest journalist in America at this point, Ronan Farrow, who continues to lay out more and more of these sexual harassment and worse stories. But Sunye initially hated Woody Allen when she met him. And they played a lot of basketball games when she was a kid, and she grew to be quite fond of him until she was 21, I believe, when he made that famous quote of, the heart wants what it wants, and she was not a blood relative, and he married her. Is anybody not creeped out by that?
I was so creeped out when it happened.
I'm still creeped out.
I still am. Yeah, exactly. I mean, she met him when she was how old? Like 12 or something? She was
10. She was 10 years old.
Very young. Oof. Yeah.
She was very, here's some of the things from the story. Let me save you some time here. Before being adopted by Mia Farrow, Mia Farrow had 10 adopted kids, I believe, at one point. And she lived in a separate house from Woody Allen. Which, listen, that part's not creepy. That part, I would argue, is maybe the greatest way to keep a marriage together.
I would agree.
Before getting adopted by Farrow, she grew up extremely, extremely poor and literally scouring dumpsters, dumpster diving for food. She described her childhood as physically and emotionally abusive prior to her adoption here in America. As I said, she hated Woody Allen when she first met him. She never wanted to have kids of her own. She and Allen adopted 2 kids, Bichette, now 19, and Manzi, now 18. But Sunye was not attracted to the concept of conceiving. Please put your own punchlines in here. I could definitely have children, but I just was never interested. And she and Woody, this is interesting, she and Woody Allen have not spent a night away from each other since their marriage.
And they've been together 27 or 28 years.
That's a feat because he's a director and he directs films in different... I mean, he's all over the world. I mean, the movie that was in Paris and there was one in Italy. I mean, he does a ton of travel, so she comes with him, I guess.
Yeah, it's just creepy. Not the part where they're together, the part that they got together.
Well, because it's hard to, you know, when you're not a blood relative... There's something to be said for that, but it's hard not to think, was he eyeing her as a child? Mm-hmm. You know, that's the part that's weird. Or did he all of a sudden notice her as an adult?
Like, do we know any other, and it doesn't have to be somebody famous. Have you even heard a story about this? You know, other than some cliched below the Mason-Dixon line joke? Well, she's not a first cousin.
No, I don't have any.
There's no reference point for it. There's no reference point for it. If she's 10 when you met her, and she grows up in front of you, and then you're attracted to her in that way at 22, that doesn't make it okay.
Well, it's just as creepy as a teacher marrying the student, like the Mary Kay Letourneau thing.
It's going to go creepier.
Yeah. This is a little creepier, but that was so creepy at the time, too. You know, the teacher and the student. Ooh.
Creepy story number two, and we don't know if this is true or not true. A woman named Christine Blasey Ford wrote a confidential letter to senior Democratic lawmakers alleging that Brett Kavanaugh, the alleged offender in this case, and the guy that is lined up to be the next Supreme Court justice, the vote scheduled for Thursday. This woman, Ms. Ford, says that Kavanaugh, when they were both in high school, he being a couple years older than her, sexually assaulted her. This is back in the 80s, early 80s. They were high school students in suburban Maryland. Since Wednesday, she has watched as her story became public without her consent. The letter that she wrote, she demanded being kept out of this, but reporters in Washington got her name, and now she has come forward and told her story, and also says she would be happy to testify to Congress. Ford said one summer in the early 80s, Kavanaugh and a friend, both, quote, stumbling drunk, corralled her into a bedroom during a gathering of teenagers at a house in Montgomery County. While his friend watched, Kavanaugh, who had turned up the music so her screams couldn't be heard, pinned her to a bed on her back and groped her over her clothes, tried to get her one-piece swimsuit off, grinding his body against hers, and, as she said, clumsily attempting to pull off her one-piece bathing suit before putting his hand over her mouth so people couldn't hear her scream. That's a very specific story. She also told it in 2012 during a couples counseling with her husband, and she told it to someone else in the waning in the current time frame of probably 2014. And she initially contacted the Washington Post tip line when it became a rumor that Kavanaugh could be the nominee.
And I mean, people, the skeptics among us, would say, "Why now? Why is she coming out with her story?" But there was, you know, she had filed this anonymously because she didn't want to be dragged. And she tried to do it this spring, and then, of course, now she has recognized that this is going to be it's going to affect her one way or the other, and she's coming forward public. And her lawyer this morning said she would testify in front of Congress if asked.
So the questions are many, but amongst them, in this Me Too environment, shouldn't this woman be heard?
Yeah.
And if it turns out she made the whole thing up, pay the price for making it up. You know, whatever that turns out to be. But how can you... I mean, honestly, it doesn't have to be the Me Too environment. We should hear her anytime. But why, there's no reason this vote has to occur on Thursday. It just doesn't. The vote can be put off.
Yeah, I think that's the appropriate thing to do. I think you gotta hold it off, and you have to investigate this claim.
And I'd love to hear from somebody who could tell me why it should be put through, why the vote has to happen on Thursday, because it doesn't. Are there more? Are there more accusers? Are there more deniers of the same as of this morning? No.
I think the issue is that the Judge Kavanaugh has denied this happening. And so now you get to a point where if it is proven and it's proven that Judge Kavanaugh lied, then you have an issue, because this is someone that we want to trust to not lie, to be honest, and to be a Supreme Court justice for years to come.
This is why I hate the lifetime appointment part of this. And I know we're not going to have a constitutional amendment about this anytime soon. Aside from the fact that I believe you age out of any job. You know, you could be 85 and be way more on your game than I am at 57. But naturally, when you get to be 80 or 90, you're not as good as you were when you were 50 or 60 or even 70. So the fact that this is a lifetime appointment and this could affect laws in this country for the next 30 years, of course you want to get
Here's the thought as well, and this is one that, you know, if you're in the political arenas, what about vetting? I mean, you have to ask Republicans as well. This is the candidate that came forth. Was this in his past? Did no one know about this? Did no one know about what happened in the spring when the letter came forward? Meaning, did they just say, did Trump, the president, say it doesn't matter?
Well, our president has set precedent.
Another question that needs to be answered.
That's a separate thing.
Yeah, there's 20 women who have accused him.
And again, this is just about answering these questions. I don't think that there's anybody, Democrat or Republican. I mean, some Democrats and listening, and of course, Democrats who are on the Hill are saying, withdraw your nomination. But I think that most people just want to be able to hear this case, because there are denials and there are contradictory statements.
If somebody accused me of this, I'd want to prove that it wasn't true. You know, I've got kids, but I mean, I want to prove it for me. Before I took this incredible job, this lifetime appointment, I wouldn't want this hanging over my head. There are people who 27 years later still think that Clarence Thomas sexually harassed and threatened
Anita Hill.
Mm-hmm. And there's evidence to prove that really backs it up, that it's true. That's hung over. That's part of his story.
I think that's hung over American history
forever.
In the way that we just at that point dismissed that being an issue. That shouldn't be an issue that would stop someone from being Supreme Court
justice. So if you're Brett Kavanaugh, I would think you wouldn't want to be that guy.
It could be, though, that he doesn't see it the same way. You know, and I'm not defending what may or may not have happened, but sometimes two people's sides are different.
Right. Well, he's claiming it never happened at all. He's claiming he wasn't even in the room.
Yeah. I mean, do you ever forget you did something that somebody brought up and you're like, oh my God, we were there and did do that. You know, it can, things that happened a long time ago.
You could definitely have different perspectives on things, but we've talked about this before. There is there's a flaw in your wiring if you hold a woman down or you get off on the fact that somebody is afraid and you're taking advantage of them. And drunk can't be an excuse.
No, I know. There probably are some, I'm going to say guys because it's more guys than girls, who had an incident when they were young who aren't serial people who thought, oh, so that was being too aggressive, who didn't realize till you get with maturity, like, just because I wanted it doesn't mean it's okay. You know,
That's why if it did happen, if he had come forward and said what you just said, I made a horrible mistake.
Or I didn't think I made a mistake.
Yeah, or even
at the time,
there's more to this story that's better than it absolutely.
I don't remember it that way. Mm-hmm. You know, he said, she said would be different than I wasn't in the room.
Yeah,
the potential electoral damage here is significant because if you go with the general thought that we are in the Me Too environment, and you've seen Les Moonves most recently, but a number of careers rightfully or maybe questionably ruined. This is a sort of question that needs to be answered. And if you're a woman who is considering voting in the midterms, maybe you're considering voting for, you know, your local Republican, whoever your local Republican is, and you find out that they also supported the fact that we should shove this vote in on Thursday, maybe you vote against that person. It can't help. There's no way this helps Republicans when the vote comes down. So, and what does it all come back to? The same thing it always comes back to: turnout. You have to vote. Do your homework. You have to vote. And later this week, as soon as tomorrow, I believe, we will have on Peter Roskam, possibly Sean Kasten tomorrow as well.
Yeah,
they will both be on in the hotly contested district they're both fighting over. And so we'll do the 6th, we'll do the 12th, and we'll continue to chip away at these races to try to give you as much information as possible. In the meantime, if you want to do your research, go to ballotpedia.org, Ballotpedia. .org, and it's just a great resource for research on these candidates.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
Texter says, Steve, the accuser of Kavanaugh is a diehard Democrat, an academic woman from California. Duh. I mean, that kind of close-minded thinking is just part and parcel to the problems we have in this country. And if this person wasn't a diehard Democrat and this scenario was flipped, you, Texter, would be defending them. So how about we meet in the middle and we hear both sides of the story? 9:31, headlines next. Oh, and in just a moment, Frank Catalano, the great Frank Catalano,
Yeah, who's saxophonist.
Who's in the PPG Paints green room. He's going to be on with us after Steve's headlines. Those are next.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Lately, right now I feel like it's all over.
Hey, join us this Friday for a White Sox rally to kick off the Red Line series. We'll be broadcasting live from Cork and Kerry at the park. That's the place that everybody else was at that we didn't go to on opening day, right?
Correct. We were at the stadium by ourselves, and everyone else was having fun at Cork and Kerry, so now we get to have some fun.
But then some of us went over to Cork and Kerry after the show.
Right.
On opening day.
I had to work with the guys.
Oh, I know.
Yeah,
I know.
Was in the cage.
The BP.
And, yeah. Get details at WGNradio.com for the whole day, going all the way through John Williams, so Bill and Wendy, and John Williams as well. It's all sponsored by Goose Island Beer Company and Virtue Cider. Justin, tell everybody who's in studio.
Frank Catalano, saxophone, jazz saxophone player, who is a tremendous player, who had a great album back in 2016, Bye Bye Blackbird, with Jimmy Chamberlain. The Frank Catalano Quintet has played all over the world, continues to play. A new album is out now with Jimmy Chamberlain called Tokyo Number 9, and he is in studio. He's got a show tomorrow night at the G-Man right next to Metro on Clark Street. And Frank Catalano, good to see you. Thanks for being here.
Why am I not hearing you? There you are.
Thanks for having me.
How'd you meet Jimmy Chamberlain from the Smashing Pumpkins?
Me and Jimmy met probably about 20 years ago. Unofficially, we met at the Elbow Room, which is now, I think, called Flatiron, or changed names, but I used to play there with a legendary drummer named Barrett Deems, who used to be Louis Armstrong's drummer. And I think I first met Jimmy there, but we have a mutual friend, our friend Julie Bush, and we started playing together 20 years ago or so, just hanging out and jamming. And then this is actually our fourth album that we recorded live in Tokyo. So, this has been a fun run, and we'll see
what
continues.
It's been a whirlwind for you. I mean,
never stops.
It's this summer, you played out, you continue to play. I've seen you, I follow you, and it's nonstop around the world. Is there a point when you're just like, okay, that's enough.
Screw this, I'm out.
That's enough.
Well, I mean, I love playing more than anything, so it's fun. But yeah, this last month, not having a day off, all the concerts in England and Spain went great, and the festivals, and then Drambuie sponsors a lot of my shows. They put together 30 concerts for me, so there is no downtime until Thanksgiving.
But you're not seasonal. You know, I mean, this is not like a festival season guy. Everybody wants you to play all the time.
Yeah, it just doesn't stop, and I love it, and I'm happy about it, but definitely.
When's the last time you turned a gig down?
I would never turn down a gig just for the sake of turning it down unless it was really crazy, like our Mary Had a Little Lamb story earlier or something.
I told Frank the tragic story of why I gave up the saxophone.
But there's a lot of times where you'll get asked to do several things in one night, and then, of course, unless I get cloned or something, you can only be at one spot.
There's only so many lips. I know you play piano. I know you play drums. I know you play the flute. What came first?
Actually, guitar.
Oh, good talk.
I'm a horrible
guitar player. Covered them all.
Yeah. The one I missed.
Yeah. That was actually the first one.
So why saxophone?
You know, it was like fifth grade band day or whatever.
Me too.
And I just thought it looked cool. And my mom said the saxophone's pretty cool. And she was with me. And I'm sure she's listening at home now. And it was ever since then, I just loved it. And I haven't put it down.
Where's your idol?
I never got to meet him, but Charlie Parker would have probably been.
Yeah,
the
he
first
did okay.
Person
there. Yeah, he was all right.
You know, for you to make a transition from someone who just loved it in grade school and played it in high school and got into music, and to now be someone who is as accomplished as they come as a saxophone player in jazz, how have you evolved? I mean, I talk about the music now. Are you doing things that you never thought were possible with the saxophone?
Well, I've had several weird injuries. I had my finger cut off and put back on that some people know about, but I don't talk about a lot. And that was one thing, just trying to overcome that. And I patented a device that kind of lets you play if you have some hand injuries and kind of work in some piano techniques and other stuff. So that I really... I would say for 5 or 6 years was really trying to push the limit on that and see what I could do with that.
Lately, but how do you teach your nine-figure technique to people with 10?
Well, I just had a book come out by Hal Leonard Publishers called Modern Saxophone Technique. So if you've had an injury or even if you haven't had an injury,
cool.
It goes through a bunch of different options on not only the embouchure and that part of it, but actual, finger techniques. A lot of people actually use the muscles in their finger. They use the muscles to lift their finger off the key.
Yeah.
But if you have everything set up right, you should never have to use those muscles. So you should be able to play twice as fast by just eliminating that one thing. So there's a lot of little fun tips.
Which finger?
And stuff in there. It was my right middle finger that I had cut off.
Did you meet Rahm at the meeting?
I know.
Rahm Emanuel, the lost finger meeting?
I did not, but I saw Justin, one of your picture.
Yeah,
on
the
Facebook.
Picture, yeah.
Oh, did you say that, Justin? Yeah, that was nice. Can you play some for us?
Sure.
You want to tell us what it is, or should we guess and win something?
I think let's guess and win something.
I don't know if you noticed, he's wearing a Blackhawks hat.
Yes,
too.
He
That's
is.
A really
Frank
sweet one.
Choice by you.
The show's at G-Man Tavern tomorrow, which is, of course, the bar that's right next to Metro on Clark Street, right in Wrigleyville. Frank Catalano's new album with Jimmy Chamberlain's called Tokyo Number 9. Here we are guessing. We're guessing what Frank's going to play in the mystery
box. Acoustic hanging out in the world's greatest radio studio. WGN, right? Frank, whenever you're ready.
Theme from Night Court.
Yeah.
Got very Night Court-ish.
I'm going to go with an original. I think that was Too Cool for the Room. Was that Too Cool for the Room? And if it's not, it was.
That was actually, it wasn't an original, and that was called Shaken off the new album.
Love that.
All right. The album Tokyo
Love
Number
that.
9 in
we
studio.
Have,
Frank
we don't
Catalano.
Smoke, but nobody smokes, but we should have had smoke blowing up there.
Yeah, a lot of smoke.
We'll take a break, come back, and then more with Frank in just a second. And again, where do we see him?
He's going to be at the G-Man Tavern tomorrow night on 3,500 block of 3,700 block?
Yeah, it's right across from...
it's by Wrigley Field.
Next
right next to yeah.
The Metro and across from Wrigley, yeah.
Yeah, that's a great spot right on the corner. It used to be the Gingerman Tavern, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
all
it's
right.
A great place.
More coming up. Frank Catalano's here. I was looking at a list of the people you've played with. Who haven't you played with? Who do you want to play with that you've never played with? And it's got to be somebody alive.
I think of people that are alive currently, I've played with most of the people that I was looking forward to. People that are no longer with us, the list is miles long, you know.
Sure.
John Coltrane.
Speaking of miles.
On. It's crazy. I did get to recently mention the Blackhawks hat with my buddy Jim Cornelison, who sings the anthem for the Blackhawks. Just got to finish up a fun album with him. So that's
how
been
great was that?
Really
yeah.
cool.
We love Jimmy.
Yeah, Jim is awesome.
If
and
he could only sing,
it's just now coming out. So check that out.
He worked with J-Lo.
I've played with her. I played on a bunch of pop stuff, 10, 15 years ago. Destiny's Child, Beyonce, like a lot of those.
Yeah. That's
things.
Tremendous.
So, yeah, it runs the gamut, I guess.
Frank, before we hear a little more from you, the idea of where jazz is at, because there's a lot of great players that are coming up through the colleges, through schools, but there's something to be said about that jam session. And I know you had a relationship with Von Freeman and others in Chicago who taught you a little bit about how to be a jazz saxophonist. Is that missing? I talk to so many different musicians, and there isn't that vibe anymore.
I always let people sit in with me, and I love it. And I had a bunch of people sit in with me, you know, this weekend at Andy's Jazz Club, at the Green Mill. I always let people sit in with me. And that comes a lot of, you know, from Von Freeman, you know, 25 years ago, mentoring me and being such a
paying it forward. You're paying it forward.
I think it's the way to do it. Yeah. I think it's good vibes. Everyone learns. And I do feel a little bit bad that there's not as many jam sessions as there used to be where you can learn. And as a community of musicians come together. And yeah, a lot of music education now has kind of been removed from the club and the musical community into the classroom. And some of that is cool, but I wish and I feel very lucky that I got to know Von Freeman and so many great musicians as a young person. So, but I wish there was a little more of that still going.
We're
going
to ask you to play into the Bill and Wendy Show in just a minute. But first, coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Bertrand from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. On WGN.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
Did you have a nice weekend?
Yes, it was lovely.
Okay.
I have no recollection of what I did, so
it was relaxing.
Thank you. How
about you, Bill?
I had a pretty nice time, Steve.
What'd you do?
This and that.
This is the kind of hardcore detail you're going to get over the next 3 hours.
That's
right?
What we do.
Yeah. Before we go, one more.
Yeah, let's get a. What are we going to hear here? Frank Catalano, who will be at the G-Man Tavern coming up tomorrow night. His new album is Tokyo No. 9, along with Jimmy Chamberlain.
And Bill, feel free to scat along.
I would like to scat along.
What are we going to hear here, bud?
I think maybe a standard this time. How about something pretty and short and sweet? How about At Last?
At Last.
Oh, I'm going to sing. No, I won't. Go ahead.
That was the theme from...
That was Night Court right there.
I love when you make it talk. Yeah. Make it talk. You do that with a piccolo.
Well, thank you, Steve, for recognizing that. Yeah,
and the slide whistle. I don't want to sell you something.
Yep.
Yeah. Frank, you're the best. I hope
thanks,
you come
Frank.
Back.
He's tonight so at, or tomorrow night at G-Man Tavern.
Thank you so much.
And where do we get Frank Catalano music unless we steal it from you?
You're welcome to have it. You don't even have to steal it. I'll give it to you because you're awesome, and I appreciate it. But CatalanoMusic.com is my website. Okay. So
there you go. Thanks, Frank.
Thanks, buddy. Great seeing you. Wendy.